You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are doing it. Locked On Wolverines podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. I did that a lot better than I did yesterday. I'm your man on the ground, Isaiah Hole, publisher of Wolverines Wire through USA Today Sports Media Group, and it is Thursday, therefore, we are doing the Michigan Mailbag, and we have a ton of questions, so let's just get right into it, starting with our leaders and best, James Crittup at James Crittup 6, always starting us out. Assuming Wisconsin stuffs the run game, do you trust Gattis and McNamara to call and execute a solid and complete game? Which one do you have the least confidence in? I think they will pass the ball in this game. And the reason why I have that confidence is based off of what Jim Harbaugh said after the Washington game. He said, if we felt we could have beaten them by throwing 56 times, we would have done that. But we felt we couldn't do that, so we ran the ball 56 times. So I do believe that that will be in the game plan. I'm not 56 passes. I mean, Matt Weiss said on Wednesday that, hey, there'll be games where we're throwing 30 times. And then Jim Harbaugh told, and now I'm getting it mixed up, I think it was Ivan Mazel, that, hey, we went into the season thinking we were going to be 50-50, and it just didn't, the run game was working so well that that's not what happened. And certainly we could get back to that, to passing more. I mean, it has to be in the cards, right? I think Michigan will be able to run okay. Not great against Wisconsin. And I think you've got to do, like Jake Butt's been saying for a damn near a month now, you're going to have to pass to open up the run. I want to see play action. Kind of want to see it on play number one, right? Just so it's like, look, you don't know what's coming. I'd really like to see that. Because you know they're going to suck up for the run. As far as who I have the least amount of confidence in, as far as that's concerned, it's Gattis. Because Gattis is, and listen, I love Gattis. I don't get why he's so maligned completely. But to me, the big thing with him is sometimes he goes into his shell. It's been that way since game two for him. And I get sometimes why he's doing it. But, it kills the killer instinct. Jed Fish and Tim Drevno had a killer instinct. They didn't really go into a shell. They took shots. I think Michigan's going to need to take shots. So I think that, yeah, McNamara didn't perform well in parts in the Washington game or in parts in the Penn State game last year or in parts of the Rutgers game, but I still think I've seen enough from him to say he's probably not going to be completely errant. He's been very accurate for the most part, in 2.5 games, he's been very accurate. And then 1.5 games, not so much. Continuing, if in other rivalries, is one team completely and overly obsessed with the other, like Michigan State is with Michigan? It's kind of funny. And I know if you don't know, he's referencing on YouTube, on my personal YouTube channel. I posted a video of Cornelius Johnson. And I said, Cornelius Johnson talks the state of the Michigan passing game. And a Sparty, and I confirmed that by going to his YouTube profile that he is indeed a Sparty, was like, typical Michigan. They're not even playing Michigan State this week. And they're out there living in Renton Free, R-E-N-T-O-N, free, in Michigan's head. And it's like, so many wonderful things about that. And he's still, I don't think he's taking it down, right? Like, hilarious. And it's Jan Brady syndrome, right? They want Michigan to treat them like they treat Michigan State. And hey, when I was young, when I was growing up, that was kind of, at least it felt like the case to me. That was the rival to me because Michigan beat Ohio State every year. So I didn't even know that Ohio State was a rival because I wasn't like super well versed in Michigan things. I cared more about the Detroit Lions and, no one was like telling me about the history and stuff like that. So it is funny. Josh Barr, Jadicky, will it be disappointing if the defense doesn't generate turnovers this week against a quarterback who has been giving them out like candy? Absolutely. Because I think that Michigan's defense is certainly better than Notre Dame's. and probably on par with probably on par with Penn State to some degree. Penn State's probably a little bit better in my eyes, even though Pro Football Focus, I think, has Michigan as being a better defense than Penn State. I think I look at Tyler Beach, the left tackle, and he's got the worst pass blocking grade in of any of the starters in the conference, or the second worst, rather. And their pass blocking in general has not been great, probably in large part because of Tyler Beach. I think that you can scheme a lot of different places to put Aiden Hutchinson to really make him create havoc in the backfield. So Graham Mertz feels rushed. He's already not very accurate as it is. I think that you're going to see a lot of disguises and things of that nature with the defense, more so than what we've seen so far. And I think Wisconsin will have some stuff schemed up because their back is against the wall right now. But I really am curious to see what they do on the front end to create some issues for the back end. And certainly mixing between man and zone can cause a ton of confusion as it is. Curious to see if Michigan mixes safety looks, you know, single high, double high safety, on what looks like passing downs. Like first down, they probably won't be in that because here's the thing, Wisconsin is very predictable. So you can usually tell whether it's because it's first down or because they go heavy set or because they've got the linemen got their hands in the ground. You can usually tell what they're going to do. If Graham Mertz is in shotgun, it's a pretty good indication they're not going to be running the ball. So I'm curious to see how much Michigan messes with his head in that light. So, yes, it would be disappointing. My brother in metal, Michael Wolf at MWolf21. If Michigan had been holding back part of the offensive playbook, is this the game it finally gets opened up? Also, they do know it's legal to run the ball to the outside, right? I think they just have so much trust in their offensive line in the middle, especially with Vistardis, that they just were like, well, we're going to get it. And I think they were a little too late to recognize they just weren't having a good game, and Rutgers had a pretty good plan on top of it. It was a good mix, right? Rutgers had a good plan. Michigan's guys weren't having a good game. Hopefully they come to the recognition much earlier than they did. You also have to keep in mind, they were up 3 scores until suddenly they weren't. And I just think that they were just too slow to adjust. But I do think you'll see more of the offensive playbook, partially because I think you'll see a lot more passing. You hope. I hope that I'm not wrong. Otherwise, it's going to be another dreary day for me in Madison, and it's supposed to be dreary, and I'm not looking forward to that part. Jimmy Whitner at Jimmy Whitner 1. What color road pants do you think we were wearing Saturday? I'm fingers crossed. I'm hoping for blue. I think that'd be cool. But, you know, it's probably just the white. I feel like maybe they'll wear the blue against Penn State. Because obviously we've seen pictures and such that they have that in their repertoire, white with the blue. Number 2, if Michigan wins on Saturday, what position group on offense/defense will be the most responsible? It's going to be the offense, I think. I mean, because if the offense can score points, that would be the real great challenge. Is if Michigan can start early on offense, score a couple times, it would be the reverse of the 2019 game, really, right? But or 2020, because then you're taking Wisconsin out of its element, making Wisconsin throw the ball, and then considering how poor it's been at doing that, it's chances are you're going to force some of those turnovers, you're going to create some havoc, unless for whatever reason Graham Mertz is having an incredible day. Also have to keep in mind that you hope that they've learned how to seal the edge, because that's what Wisconsin attacked with impunity last year. I'm sure they'll try it again just to see. We'll see what happens there. Number 3 of our remaining games, which one are you looking forward to the most? Easily Penn State, because I love going there. I love it. It's so great. I'm probably the only media member that likes driving there. I mean, I'm excited to check out Nebraska, but I don't really like to fly. I'm working on it, and I read a book before I went to Disney the last time called Soar, and it helped going down. My flight down was great, but my flight back was bad, and it was one of the more turbulent flights I was on, and George Rooks had just committed like 90 seconds before they told us to turn off our phone. No, it was actually, we were in the air, and I had the Wi-Fi, and I got a notification saying George Rooks committed. I couldn't connect to the Wi-Fi, but I could get text messages. So I literally wrote the story on my phone and texted it to my boss to have my boss post it. And yeah, so I mean, that kind of distracted me, but that put me in some kind of anxious space for the rest of the flight. So I would be looking forward to Nebraska because that's the only Big Ten stadium I haven't been to, and I'm excited to check that out. Not excited about it being at night. My flight's at like 6 a.m. So there's personal reasons why I'm not looking forward to those things. Whereas like Penn State, it's like, whatever, I'll, you know, wake up when I want on Sunday and leisurely leave. I'll be staying an hour outside of State College, as I always do, because it's really the only way you can do it. And, you know, leisurely make my way back to Ann Arbor. KRT at Farmerk 84. Why is AJ Henning not getting more touches? Dude, who knows? I mean, he needs more touches. Absolutely. And I wonder if this is the game where that gets broken out. I'm sure you'll see him on the jet sweeps. I'm sure you'll see. Because here's the thing is, like, if you can get speed, especially on the edges or some kind of double reverse type situation, get the defense going one way and Henning going the other, that could, especially early, that could confuse them. Or you know, I'm sure that they set some things up on tape. Harbaugh used to do that back in 2015 and 16, like show you something the week before that you would have to prepare for and then run something different. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. So it'll be interesting. Besides Corum, he's probably the most electric player on offense. I agree. And, you know, I've been singing his praises since he committed. So, and you're seeing like how good he is, right? Because I've been talking about him since he was a recruit. He's one of the few people whose tape I watched because I don't necessarily do that all the time. Brandon at Brandon S616. How are reporters of the game able to live tweet plays? I have no reception anytime I go because they're connected to Wi-Fi. When you're in the press box, they're not on their phones, they're on their computer, so they're connected to Wi-Fi. Sometimes I get it on the field, but most of the time I don't, so I usually can't. In certain places like Wisconsin, I seem to be able to get reception, but Michigan Stadium, I can't. So, number two, based on some film review videos I've seen, it looks like Lestardis was getting beat a lot by the nose tackle and Cade was sloppy with mechanics. How easy are those to fix midseason? I think that they were just being sloppy, to be honest. And, I mean, I didn't rewatch the game, so I couldn't tell you for sure, but I feel like they were just kind of playing sloppy, particularly in the second half, because as Cade said, we kind of turned it off at halftime, started thinking about Wisconsin. Now, Ryan Hayes said, no, that wasn't the case. Donovan Jeter said, no, that wasn't the case. Cade said it, at least that was in his mind. I'm sure that, you know, you're up 20-3, you know, against a team that it seemed like it was, you know, pretty good, and they all thought it was going to be a pretty good team, and it became difficult suddenly, and I think that a lot of that is because they buying their own hype a little bit. Young guys are going to do that, so I think it's kind of a blessing in disguise. We'll see. Finishing us out in segment one, Jonathan Joseph at JJoseph2156. Are you going to Disney during the 50th anniversary celebration? I am not. This is in the middle of the season. selfishly, Anthony Broom and I are hoping for the Citrus Bowl, which would mean Michigan probably would lose 3 games, but we're selfishly hoping for that. But then again, we say anything in Florida. So that we, you know, if we're in Florida, so around January 2nd, we can go to Disney for a few days. And he wants to go to Universal because he didn't go like a lot of us did because he arrived late, the Citrus Bowl, whereas we got a free day with the team, which was awesome. Except for I was with the defensive line and did not recognize that Michael Dwumfor was not there because until I got a text from another reporter, have you seen Michael Dwumfor? I haven't. Weird. 4 days later. None of us noticed. All right. Anywho. Hey, guys, there's a few things in life that just aren't fun to talk about. One of them is excessive sweating. You know when you're sweating through your shirts for no reason? It's embarrassing, right? Some of you may know that I've personally dealt with this. When I speak in public, I can't help but sweat through my shirt. Now, listen, I know this isn't life or death, and there are much worse problems in the world, but let's be honest. In the moment, it feels like a big deal. Nobody likes to put out during an important speech, interview, or first date. God forbid, I'd much rather just not worry about it, and that's why I use Sweatblock antiperspirant wipes. Sweat Block is stronger and more effective than most clinical antiperspirants. You simply apply it at night before bedtime. Go to bed. The next morning, you wake up, wash, and go about your day without worrying about sweat. Guaranteed. I know this will sound too good to be true, but I literally only have to use Sweat Block once or twice a week, and it keeps me dry the whole time. No more pitting out. No more picking my shirts based on which one will hide sweat better. If you or someone you love is dealing with this, you have to check out Sweat Block. Get it today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON or at Amazon or CVS. All right, let's continue this train. Let's keep going. On to the Victor's Valiant. It grows and grows and grows. It's getting bigger. Although we aren't starting out with Jim in the North. I don't know where he is, but Zach at Zach Woodruff 3. I saw something about NCAA allowing 7 more scholarships to offset transfers. Is this real? And will that be every class moving forward? I saw something about that. I don't think it's just to offset traditional, just the transfers. I think part of it is the COVID year as well. So it's a combination. I know it's a proposal. I don't know much about it other than that. So I'd answer more on it, but I don't really know. I'm sure it would. I think they should find a way to accommodate that since free agency is happening. Brandon Carpenter at Big House Go Blue _. Do you ever see there being a Big Ten realignment of divisions? I'll continue to see what rest you're saying here. Also say Penn State beats Michigan, Ohio State beats Penn State, Michigan beats Ohio State. All lose with one, or all with one loss in conference to each other. Who would advance at that point? Don't remember how that worked. I remember in 2015 there was that tiebreaker situation if Ohio State would have not lost to Michigan State in week 12. But something to do. I think it's your overall record is part of it. And then I think I could be speaking out of my you-know-what, but it starts becoming like points scored versus, you know, things like that. I don't remember exactly. But as far as Big Ten realignment, not with the current state, although they are pretty heavily misaligned. I mean, the East is just so much more powerful than the West, and that continues. But then again, I mean, you know, if Wisconsin bounces back and Iowa continues to take care of business and, you know, those are two schools, and unfortunately you look at Minnesota and Northwestern was good for a minute and now they're not, and really not much. Nebraska is tough but doesn't win. I don't know. Mark Z at Mark Zimke. When you had a crystal ball at 24/7 Sports, did you have a methodology for when you ultimately put in a pick? Was it more of a gut reaction, or did you have a set of rules you went by before locking it in, or a bit of both? Also, are you a Mastodon fan? I'll answer the latter one, of course. First, I am to a degree. I need to check out more of their collection. I know the album The Hunter is one of my favorite albums, period. I used to always post on Instagram just a graphic saying pursue happiness with diligence from The Sparrow. There's a couple songs on there that I just think are just bar none and among the most incredible songs. That song is one of my all-time favorite songs. Trying to remember the other one that's like I can think of it in my head. I just can't think of it has like this really glassy sound. I used to listen to The Hunter when I was driving from LA to San Diego to see my dad almost every time. It just had a perfect, especially in like the fall when, you know, you have the long shadows and everything, like driving around LA down to San Diego listening to The Hunter. That was it. But I haven't gotten into any of their other albums the way I got into that one. That's got about 4 songs. Bedazzled Fingernails is the name of the song that I was thinking of, and there's another one that I can't think of, and then there's like The Tracker, I think, is another great one. As far as the crystal ball is concerned, I did have a very, like, everyone obviously operates differently. I would only put in a crystal ball if I had someone essentially tell me it's done or it's probably done for the most part. I got a couple wrong because there would be times where someone would tell me something. So one of them I got wrong was Mekhi Becton on signing day. I put it in like 2 days, like a week before signing day, and then just didn't get any follow up until saying like, no, it's not happening. So I lost out on that one. But generally it was like, if I had someone tell me whether it was someone close to Michigan or someone close to the kid telling me, hey, this is happening. It's that's usually what I would go on. And obviously things change. And sometimes it, I mean, I don't remember putting anything in with a feeling per se, but like I would have probably been more inclined to do that now. And like, I think like, you know, you've heard me say a million times over Dylan Tatum, I would have put one in. Certainly things changed, you know, with the, I feel like Michigan wasn't recruiting him as hard as it was. And that would have been a pretty good sign that no, they probably weren't going to get him, whether it was Michigan didn't really want him as much as they did, or they felt like they weren't going to get him. MSU had been after him super hard for a while, but there was a point where it was like, yeah, MSU's coming after me hard, but good luck. And they still ended up doing it. But yeah, there, I mean, so I guess a little bit of a mix between gut feeling, but it's mostly someone giving me intel that says, hey, yeah, this is, you know, we feel good about this. You know, that would usually be the we feel good about this would usually be the thing. I didn't put in a ton of crystal balls, but I did put in a few, and I got, I think, all but like one or two right, Mekhi Becton being one of them. Adam Kasel at Adam_Kasel, agree or disagree with these statements? Michigan was very vanilla on offense and defense. Agree. I think Michigan has been very vanilla on offense and defense so far. Offense didn't want to put some things on tape and use this game to get live reps. No end arounds or sweeps, no shots down the field. Well, they took a couple shots down the field. So I half disagree. But I think so. I think that I agree with the sentiment. Like, I know that in X's and O's talking to Jake, he didn't feel like Michigan's saving anything. I kind of feel like Michigan's saving some stuff. I think that it was more of a dire circumstance than just like, hey, we feel like we can just put stuff on tape, but I feel like they felt like they could win with their bread and butter plays. But I think that they've got more bread and butter plays we just haven't seen. The coaches wanted adversity in a winnable game so the players would know how to handle it against a tougher opponent. I definitely disagree on that. Definitely disagree. I don't think they wanted that. I think it just happened because I think Rutgers a lot better than people think. I think Michigan thinks Rutgers is really good, but I still think Michigan thought, hey, we can do what we want to do with our bread and butter plays. Josh Ross goes out, doesn't help the situation. I don't think they purposely put themselves in adversity because certainly they were in a position to lose that game at a point. I mean, or at least go to overtime. Momentum, I do think, shifted entirely in the second half, and I think it has a lot to do with what Rutgers was doing. The offensive staff didn't want to show adjustments off what Rutgers did. Inconclusive. I think that the offensive staff, again, I think it's still partially bravado, false bravado. I think three games of rushing 350 yards, particularly against Washington. Again, Washington's a great defense. Bad offense, great defense. I think that instilled a little false bravado. On top of it, I think that there was partially, like, I do think the offensive line didn't have its best game, you know? Feel like they just didn't want it as bad as Rutgers did. They still won. Being 4-0 is better than 3-1, 100%. 100%. Rutgers is in the Big Ten and Schiano is a good coach. 100% agree. I mean, obviously they are in the Big Ten, but Schiano is definitely a good coach. And he's proven that his earlier stint at Rutgers. He obviously got an NFL head coaching job based off of that. I think that he's a heck of a coach. And the fact that Rutgers really isn't beating itself anymore. It's not a Benny Hill theme situation running on out there in Piscataway. I think they're going to give Ohio State a game. I don't think they're going to win. I didn't predict them to win. I think it's going to be like a 1-2 score game. I think it will look more competitive for majority of the game than the Michigan-Rutgers game did. I don't think Rutgers is going to have to come back. I think Isaiah Pacheco and Aaron Cruikshank, and I think they're going to be able to run on Ohio State. Noah Vedral is going to be able to run on Ohio State. I think Bo Melton is going to punish them a bit. I think they're going to have themselves a game. The question is, Ohio State's got the best offense in the country right now. But they make mistakes, and Rutgers thrives off mistakes. I think there's going to be some mistakes Ohio State makes. I think it's going to be the toughest defense that they've had to face all year long. I think it's going to be interesting. KM at Keith underscore 1906. Will we see more Mike Barrett this week? Yes, because they said, Jim Harbaugh flat out said, yeah, we're preparing Mike Barrett to be out there more. I think partially as a contingency for Josh Ross. So, yes. Spencer Whitmore at Spencer Whitmore. Haven't won in Madison in 20 years. Feels like this is a game that will set the stage for the rest of the season. Am I crazy for feeling a 20-16 win? No, because, I mean, that's kind of what everyone's predicting is something around those lines, right? Like a 4-point win or so, 3-point win. I predicted like 24-20 or something like that, I think. I think that it's going to be a tough game. Right now, Michigan's playing better than Wisconsin, but they've done all that at home. We'll see what they're like on the road. That's going to be a completely different animal, obviously. I'm curious to see if Wisconsin has something up its sleeve. If Graham Mertz suddenly is a world beater, it's kind of like playing, you know, when the Detroit Lions play someone, it's like, oh, that guy's bad. I think back to Matt Flynn for the Green Bay Packers. It's like, oh, Lions are going to get their win in Green Bay finally. And they go and Matt Flynn throws for 400 something yards, you know, it's not good. So, you know, as long as, but, you know, Michigan's defensive line should be good against Wisconsin's offensive line based off of what we've seen for three games. And Michigan's offensive line, I think, should be able to handle what Wisconsin's defensive line throws at it at least 50% of the time. It's going to be a struggle, but I think it can happen. That said, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, it took me all week, really, to get to the point where I said, you know what, Michigan on paper has to win this game. But I still have that nagging feeling like it's just going to be another, you know, the same thing I've seen in Madison twice. You know, especially that last half against Rutgers doesn't inspire confidence. But, you know, I think as long as they're scripted well, just open up and can go out there. I think that they'll run a little bit better than people think. That's part of it. Jacob Javaria at Jacob172139.50. How many rushing attempts for 1 yard or less will it take Jim to realize we can't run the ball 50 times on the number one rush defense in America? Number one, I don't think that they're going to. I don't think they're going to run 50 times against Wisconsin. I think that they know that they're not going to be able to do that. But I do think that they will run because you have to try to run. You can't not, but I think you'll see more balance in this game. I do. Will we dig ourselves into a hole and have to pass our way out of it with a pass game that has been non-existent to this point in the season? I think the game plan in the previous games is because they felt like they could run. And they started to run on Rutgers the first 17-play drive. They just ran right down Rutgers' throat. There was no reason to think we should stop doing this. You know what I mean? And yeah, Rutgers figured it out. They just adjusted too slow. But there was nothing really indicating, especially in the first half, like, hey, you can't do it. I mean, shouldn't say nothing. They, you know, Blake Corum wasn't having the success he had been having. He wasn't breaking anything. But I think that they were probably with the mindset of, all right, he's getting 2 yards a carry right now, but here before too long, he's going to break through because that's what's happened so far. You know what I mean? I don't think that that's going to be the game plan going into Wisconsin. I really don't. And I think these coaches are coaching for their lives on top of it, more so than the guys in Wisconsin. So you hope they have a good plan. Rob Anto at Rob Anto 1. Other than Cade or JJ, which offensive player do you realistically think can have the biggest impact on this game? Collectively the line, number one or number two, pick a running back. Unless, like, suddenly there's just, like, a receiver goes off that we just didn't even know. Like, Daylon Baldwin has gotten very few targets, but he's a starter now. Like, you know, is there a point where suddenly it's like, ooh, whoa, look. Because you can't tell me that, like, as much as I love Wilton, you know, and I do love Wilton. You know how much I love Wilton. I've been a Wilton defender. I love Jehu and Amara. I haven't talked to Jehu, I don't think, but once since he left. But I've talked to Amara a few times. I've seen Amara a few times. You can't tell me when you look at the talent, like, from Cade to, you know, Cornelius and Dalen, and, you know, add in some of that, that trio should inspire more confidence, right? It should, it really should. You know, it's, to me, I feel like there's a lot to really like about what Michigan has. They just haven't been using it much, and I think that you'll see them eventually use it, because otherwise, why even recruit a five-star quarterback, you know, in JJ or in the, you know, go out and try to get all these receivers. You know, at some point, you know, you have to use them. I think this will be the game when Michigan starts using them, because Wisconsin's pass defense is not nearly as good as its run defense. Bonus question, what are you feeling on the outcome of this game? I think it's going to be close. I think that I think Wisconsin's defense will stand up pretty well, but I mean, it's, I think it's going to be similar to the Penn State game, except for I think Wisconsin will make mistakes, and Michigan so far, as aside from play calling, you know, running into a brick wall, hasn't really made mistakes. They haven't turned the ball over. I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan turns the ball over in this game just because, but Wisconsin's really not shown much of a proclivity to get turnovers either. So we'll see. Chase Glasser via Instagram. Listen to the pod today. As you know, I'm loathe to give the program credit, but you said Harbaugh's never won in a hostile environment on the road. Sans 2015 Penn State, I would point out he is 2-0 against Michigan State, and East Lansing 1-2 at home. Though the presence of Michigan fans might make that less daunting. I mean, yeah, it doesn't really, I don't know why, but that doesn't count in my mind, because whenever I've gone to East Lansing, it doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel the same as going to Camp Randall, or it doesn't feel the same as going to, you know, going to Penn State or Ohio State. Like, those feel like, holy cow, are you kidding me? And yeah, there's been a lot of Michigan fans both times I've gone and to East Lansing. It really hasn't felt like, because Michigan's been really good in 2016 and 2018 when they've gone, you know, Michigan State hasn't been as good. So it's been, it's kind of like when Ohio State plays at Michigan. It's just, there's a large Michigan contingent. It doesn't feel that hostile at all to me. Doesn't, like, yeah, there's moments where I hear people in the crowd yelling things and it sounds awful, but it really doesn't feel that daunting. Rookie at H War Chant, was Cade hurt during the game last week? That's a hypothesis a lot of us have, but, you know, they won't confirm that. It does kind of feel like it, though, right? I'm not going to expound on that, but it just feels like it. Ryan at IM3LAC, why is this fan base so unbearable at times? Because there's this weird perception, like a false narrative of what Michigan has been. This is where some of the rival fan bases aren't completely wrong, is that Michigan fans often live in the past. The thing is, the past wasn't so far back, right? I mean, I was still in school. Like, I was recent. It felt like I was just in school, and it's been 15 some years almost since I graduated. But it feels like, you know, like, the idea of Michigan as being this big powerhouse, and the national media used to prop Michigan up because Michigan didn't have similar struggles like we see them having now. They won on the road against big teams. They beat teams they weren't supposed to. They beat Ohio State with regularity. And so people got used to that. And it had been that way from 1969 until, I mean, the Ohio State thing flipped, but for the most part, everything kind of died when Bo Schembechler died as far as what Michigan was. It all went downhill starting that week. And then it just, Harbaugh kind of got it back to that latter half of the Lloyd Carr era, you know, losing bowl games that, you know, they had no business losing, and, you know, losing about, you know, anywhere between 2 and 4 games a season. That's kind of exactly what Lloyd Carr was doing. But people still think 1997, they think 2003, and it's, hasn't been that for a while. So it's partially living in the past, having higher expectations of what the program is and what it should be. And that's, people don't want to compromise and say, this isn't, you know, that this is different. We're not the same as we used to be. They say, no, we demand excellence. Harbaugh was brought here to be excellent. Well, there might be some inherent reasons why Michigan can't, in modern college football, necessarily break out. The recruiting base in the state of Michigan isn't the same. And it's not as close to the SEC. I know Ohio and Columbus feels really close, but I mean, it's kind of almost the South. I mean, it's only what, like an hour and a half away from Kentucky, you know, it's right there in the SEC. One of my best friends lives in Columbus. He has a Southern accent, you know, it's weird. So I think they have some built-in advantages and stuff like that that maybe, you know, and obviously, you know, they take football more seriously in Ohio in the sense of the University of Michigan is all about academics, right? Like, yes, we think about it with football and it's the big house and it's the biggest stadium in the country and all of that stuff. But like the academic side, which is, you know, a pretty important thing, like, I've told you before about my conversation with Mark Schlissel in 2014, the week after the Shane Morris incident. I'm like, what are you going to do about Brady Hoke and Dave Brandon and all of that? Wasn't in the media yet. It's just there as like a alumni, and he didn't want to hear any of it. He didn't want to talk about any of it. You know, he wanted to talk about academics. So I think that there is a slight disconnect as well between what, you know, those two sides a little bit. Finishing us out in segment two. HBD is in happy birthday, Tasha J. Red heart, red heart. At the underscore Mike B underscore show. What's the fewest amount of points Michigan can score and to still beat Wisconsin? Maybe 13. Michigan's averaging 11.9 points allowed. Wisconsin's averaging like 20 points a game. But a lot of that is driven up by Eastern Michigan when they scored like 50. Because they scored what? Like, I don't remember the score. 14, like 10 or 16 or 17 or something like that against Penn State. I don't remember exactly. And then 13 against Notre Dame. So I think that the big thing would be make it a 3-score game at some point and you're probably done. But, you know, I wouldn't count on, you know, getting to 14 and saying we're good. P.S. Your podcast lives renting free in my head. Nice. Nicely done. All right, rockauto.com. It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique. It's also remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and for do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Also, football is back. It's better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron because we are in the season. In it. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this year. With the new and updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to betonline.ag to sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget to use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. Let's keep it going. I don't know why I'm talking over the music, but I'm doing it. All right. You just ever have a day, you just don't, you know, you just don't feel right. Went and saw Venom today, and that's a movie. That exists. I'm not saying it's bad. It's something doesn't sit right with me with Venom for some reason. I don't know why. Just doesn't. Finish us out. We got a ton here. Firkinator at Firkinator 1. Of the leaders, who are the best? Who will rise up and lead the team to victory, whether vocally or within the gameplay? A hungry team coming off a loss will be a good test. I mean, you have to imagine Cade. I mean, for all of the hand-wringing over Cade, I mean, I think people forget what he did at Rutgers. And people are like, oh, he can't throw the ball. He threw pretty well in that game, and Rutgers still had a really good defense. I'd have to look and see exactly what they were rated. Of course, I closed my CFB stats like I always do. But last year, I would imagine they probably went down a little bit because they have to play like Ohio State, and they have to, you know, that game certainly drove them down a bit, but I'm sure they still finished with a pretty good defense. No, they didn't. They finished with 104th defense in the country. But nonetheless, I mean, Cade still came out and slung it. I mean, that's all you can ask for in some degree, to some degree. So, I mean, Cade, Aiden, Andrew Vistardis has to do his role. Really, the team captains, that the three that are playing, able to play. Josh Ross obviously made a big, you know, he did a lot. When he was in the game, he was kind of having like the best game it felt like that he had maybe had to date before he went out. And I think Daxton Hill, that's another guy. You really just need your playmakers to go out there and make plays. That's what you need. Grimy Gus via Instagram. With Wisconsin faltering, Graham Mertz not living up to expectations, are they still a good parameter for how good Michigan is, or will that come at a later date? I mean, it's a little bit of both, right? You got to get through this test. I don't think if they lose this game, it's the be-all, end-all still, because I still think Wisconsin's a good team, particularly in the trenches, right? Despite Tyler Beach, I mean, this is still a really good offensive and defensive line, and that's how you win football games. Skill position players do what they can do because they have good trench players, generally. So I don't think it's the be-all, end-all if Michigan, you know, loses this game. That said, I mean, I think you need these guys to, you want to see that these linemen on Michigan's side can handle their own. The offensive line is as good as it's looked for most of the year so far. It will handle enough of the defensive line, right? You think back to 2019, Michigan didn't run well against Wisconsin, didn't really try, you know, but most teams didn't. We went into the same this game week four that year. And it was like, whew, Wisconsin's only allowing like a yard a carry. And there, you know, it was similar type of thing. And later in the year, Ohio State ran all over them. Illinois ran all over them. Nebraska ran all over them. They're susceptible. So I think that would, if Michigan's line can handle Wisconsin and its line on either side of the ball, then it's a really good sign. Yeah, there will still be tests. Still at Nebraska at night is a test. Nebraska's played good football. Problem is they shoot themselves in the foot or the leg. They're not Plaxico Burress, but they do it. Michigan State clearly vastly improved. It looks like the exact same team as Michigan in a lot of ways. Running the football, throwing, but not so much. Right down to last week where they didn't do anything in the second half. And then the other team had a turnover that screwed things over for them, you know? Also, and continuing, listen to the album False Idol by Veil of Maya. If that's one of their newer ones, I could probably get into it. And I have a couple Veil of Maya songs on my phone. I can't get into them that much. My friend Davis, who got me into metalcore, swears by Veil of Maya. It's just like the old style. This is just too much for me, but I'll give it a shot. Fortunately, I'm riding with Josh Henschke to Wisconsin. I don't think that he'll appreciate if I try it out on him. Plus, Wage War comes out tomorrow, which I'm excited about. But if I'm, you know, subject him to anything, it'll be that. Maybe Thrice's album that came out recently, and I haven't listened to that yet. That's probably a good middle ground. Josh is a nice guy via Instagram. I was dying laughing at your Animals as Leaders name drop a few weeks ago. I didn't think anyone else liked that band. This got me wondering if you could make a supergroup using the members from some of your favorite bands, what would the lineup look like? And who would you have on guitar, vocals, etc.? I've been listening to Animals as Leaders since like 2013-ish. I remember, the same friend Davis turned me on to them. I went to his house after motorcycle classes. And he played me Animals as Leaders, and then he played me a band called The Ongoing Concept, and I got into them right then. If I could make a supergroup, I mean, obviously Tosin Abasi would be the guitarist. I'd probably steal two from Tool and take Mayor James Keenan, who's my favorite vocalist, and so I'd probably have Maynard. And then probably Danny Carey is the drummer, but I don't know. So we got our guitarist. I don't know if we'll keep him. We'll add Head from Korn. Yeah, that's what we'll do. A little bit of differentiation. Korn was a very influential band for me in high school and such. You know, I was a senior in high school when Follow the Leader came out. Drummer. I have to do it. Well, bassist, that's a different one. Who would I pick as a bassist? This is difficult. know what? Drummer, I'm going to go Abe Cunningham from Deftones. Just because I like his style. I like the way he does things. I don't really know drums that well. Oh, I'm not including anyone. Okay, I'm going to take Head from Corn away. I'm going to pull in Jonathan Dealey from North Lane, my favorite band. Drummer will stay with Abe Cunningham from Deftones. Bassist, that's the big one. I don't know. Anyway, who needs a bassist? Jason Newsted, who needs a bassist? Yeah. Thanks again. Love the show, you say. Thank you. I appreciate it. Jamara at Jamara 23732. When do we see JJ McCarthy as Michigan's starting quarterback? Not this year, unless there's something that has gone horribly wrong. Sorry. It's next year, maybe? If Cade's still around, it probably 2 years from now, or I mean maybe JJ surpasses him at that point. That wouldn't be a surprise, but not this year unless something's gone horribly wrong, which means injury, probably. Wolverine Mean at WM Pod. After watching Wisconsin highlights, it's clear that Mertz is a liability when under pressure. With Hutch being seemingly the only member of our D-line who can consistently generate pressure, teams quickly figured out that double-teaming him is an effective strategy. From what you've seen so far, are there any additional strategies Michigan could employ to generate additional pressure from players not named Aiden? And who, in your opinion, is the next guy to step up? As always, love the show. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll hang up and listen. I think, number one, you move Aiden around a lot in this game. Make it so that they think that they have a strategy to deal with him and move him around. Delay him, even. I mean, maybe you don't want to delay him. He's got such an amazing first step, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do a couple different things. Delay him, you know, drop him into coverage. Just utilize him in different ways to confuse the heck out of Wisconsin. Number two, I wouldn't say that no one else has generated pressure. It's more the interior that hasn't necessarily. And they're holding up pretty good. They're just not generating pressure, which you obviously want to see. It'd be nice to have him O'Hurst again. But I've seen a lot of really good things from a couple guys, David Ajabo. David Ajabo has been really, he's been getting better and better as games go by. Mike Morris has been really good. So those are the other two that I've really got my eyes on. Or even when they bring Josh Ross in on a blitz, I mean, he's been dynamite as well. So yeah, I think they'll be ready for that. I think that that's the goal, is to generate as much pressure. And I think the defensive line will be able to handle that. And I think, like, you know, Hinton and Mazi have done a good job. It's just they're not necessarily getting back there and getting sacks, right? But I think they're doing a good job in the middle. So, a bunch of emojis here, so I don't know what this exactly is. But pulse apart alternation mark, Wisconsin lost on purpose, rainbow flag. At Michigan_Ohio, your thoughts on Cade's second half against Rutgers. Was it play calling, the hit he took, or just some bad QB play? I think it's probably more of the hit he took, it'd be my guess, because he just didn't look the same. And then I think the play calling, I think the bad QB play fits into the, I mean, maybe it was just bad QB play, but I feel like there was something more to it there. Christopher S. LaFuria at CS LaFuria. Offensive holding against Hutch, is that even a thing? Because I think it's a thing, and I've seen it's a thing. Yeah, I've seen it a few times and it hasn't been called. You just got to have to deal with it, unfortunately. Michigan tends to not get called for holding and really ever hasn't really since Harbaugh's come. Ohio State held on every single play in 2016. Like, every shot I have, weirdly, there's more room on the Ohio State sidelines to be over on the side so I can get a little bit closer to the action instead of staying in the end zone like I do at Michigan Stadium. But every single shot I had from the 2016 game was Taco and Wormley being held. I sent a bunch of them to Michigan at their request to send to the Big Ten. So, the Michigan Creed at Michigan Creed to finish us out. Do you think there's any truth to the narrative that Michigan coaching staff are being vanilla on purpose, meaning we could come out versus Wisconsin and look a lot different? I think there is something to it. I know Jake Butt, again, disagreed with me, but I certainly think that, I don't think they've necessarily been fully vanilla, but I think that there are variations of these bread and butter plays that we haven't seen yet, because I think that you use what you can to win the game. And while I think they've thrown a lot of different running looks at different teams, I think that there's more, certainly passing game, we haven't seen much. It seems like a lot of those big plays downfield are, and I, you know, again, I haven't really rewatched games, but I rewatched highlights, I think, from Western, and that was it. And that was just highlights, but it seems like a lot of these play designs that they have for, you know, passing are very similar, at least in concept. Might not be the same exact play design, but it's very similar in concept of, you know, the speed and space, we see it. And I do think back to like Roman Wilson's catch, you know, get him underneath one-on-one and let him go. And that's kind of like what Mike Sainristil's catch was, right? That's what Cornelius's catch was in not week two, but week three. That's what, that's kind of like what we see just kind of in general. That's what Ronnie Bell, what is the catch that didn't happen. I mean, granted it was kind of overthrown, you know, so he was going out of bounds getting it. And, you know, but, or even like his touchdown. It's all very similar concepts of, you know, get it to them somewhat underneath and let them make a play. And I think that there's more to it than that. I think that we'll see some different things. Anyway, I'll do it. No, we're late today, but we'll be back early tomorrow because I got to hit the road to go to Madison. So tomorrow, Friday, preview with Jake Butt. That is happening. So we will talk to you then. Right before I head out to Madison, or Janesville is actually where I'm staying. I don't know why I'm telling you this. If you're in Janesville, hit Henschke and I up. Anyway, all right, we'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening and or watching. Peace.